Welcome, everyone. This is the joint NCBO-OOR panel session. It's Tuesday, September the 13th, year 2011, and the topic today is kicking off the next phase of NCBO and OOR collaboration. I shall call upon Professor Mark Musen, PI of the NCBO and professor at Stanford, to open up the session for us. Mark.
Okay, thank you, Peter. I think this is pretty exciting for us at Stanford. As you know, the National Center for Biomedical Oncology is centered at Stanford, and part of our mission through NCBO is to develop an oncology repository for the biomedical oncologies of the world. And we've been funded by the National Institutes of Health for the past 6 years to begin that process. And the BioPortal, which many of you know about well, represents our work to create such a repository. It was very exciting for those of us at Stanford a few years ago when OOR became the topic of the Ontology Summit. And we've been participating in different ways over the past few years as the OOR initiative has continued, which is incredibly important to us because we see what we're doing as a piece of the overall OOR vision, and we want to do whatever we can to help the community work toward the kind of repository that is necessary to meet the needs of the greatest numbers of people. I think the good news and the bad news is that through NCBO, we've been working on the BioPortal ontology repository, and I think in many ways it provides a reference case for the kinds of functionality that the OR community is seeking. The not-so-good news, or at least the tempered news, is that because we're funded from a federal grant, what we have to do in our development work is dictated by the terms of that grant and what we proposed to do 5 years ago, and so we're kind of constrained in what we can do. We have to address the needs of the biomedical community, which are more narrow, I think, than those of the ontology community more broadly. And so for us, it's very exciting to be able to partner with the OOR community to see a bridge between the kind of work that we're doing in NCBO and the vision that the OOR community has so well articulated over the past couple of years. And so we are really excited about being able to take the BioPortal repository, which is now a very robust piece of software that's accessed by hundreds and hundreds of users every month, that really represents a nexus for a whole scientific community to come together and store and access and apply its ontologies, as something which will have a greater role within OOR. And so I think we really have something which I think is of value to the OR community. We recognize that it doesn't necessarily serve the complete vision, but we're very excited about the opportunity to work together to try to bring it at state. And I'll stop there and look forward to what others have to say.
Thank you very much, Mark. Let's have Dr. Ray Ferguson, Project Director of the NCBO and BioPortal project, to tell us the BioPortal status and plans. Ray?
Okay. Thank you, Peter. Just as a point of order, are we holding questions and discussion till the end?
Yes.
Take it during...
Yes, okay. We will try to hold all questions because everyone is muted anyway, and the mute and mute cycle actually is fairly time-consuming if people are unfamiliar. So let's hold off all questions until we get to the discussion segment of the session. Okay, back to you, Ray.
So I'm going to be talking today about where we are on BioPortal and what our plans are. I realize that many people on the phone follow BioPortal very closely and know exactly what's available. There may be others who are much less familiar, or maybe their knowledge of BioPortal is somewhat out of date and things have evolved quite a bit in the last year. So I'm going to start from the beginning and blow forward and then sort of running over what's available in BioPortal, what we've just introduced in the last couple of months, which you may have missed, even if you're following BioPortal closely, as well as what you can expect to see in the coming months, that is fairly firm on our agenda. So next slide, Peter, just slide two. So the outline of the talk, I'll talk about what NCBO is, what BioPortal is, what's new in the last few months, and what's coming. Next slide. The NCBI, as Mark pointed out, he covered this. It's one of the national centers for biomedical computing. There are about a half a dozen of these funded by NIH. It's a collaboration among four sites with Stanford at the lead, Mayo Clinic, University of Victoria, and University of Buffalo. Next slide here, four. So TIA is of NCBO. Essentially, we create and maintain a library of biomedical ontologies. We build tools and web services to support the use of those ontologies. And thirdly, we collaborate with scientific communities that develop and use these ontologies. Next slide, Peter. IND biomedical ontologies inside of BioPortal. And if you're at all familiar with biomedicine, we probably have all of the ontologies or vocabulary lexicons that you're familiar with. We have very popular ones, the gene ontology, SNOMED, which is for clinical terms, International Classification of Diseases. These are all large. Many of them are legacy ontologies. We also have newer ontologies. We're newer here, like in the last 2 years, like the gene ontology that are also very popular. So essentially, any ontology of interest in biomedicine is probably in BioPortal. Next slide, please. Six. So BioPortal itself, there's sort of two aspects to the BioPortal. One is that it allows you to work with the ontologies themselves. That is to upload an ontology, to update a new version of ontology. You can download an ontology, browse ontologies, write notes on ontologies, reviews of ontologies. You can create subsets or supersets of an ontology called a view. And you can create mappings between ontology terms. So these are all, it's all functionality related to working directly with the ontologies themselves. In addition, we have some sort of demonstration interfaces that show how one might build tools that demonstrate the use of these ontologies. So we have something called the annotator, which will take a piece of text and essentially mark it up with terms in some or all of the ontologies that are in BioPortal and return that to the users. Likewise, we've sucked in some external resources and we sort of pre-computed the annotations on those resources, so then you can query particular ontology terms and find out what resources out there, say a publication database or something like that, what resources actually refer to those ontology terms. Next slide, Peter. Seven. So I'm just not going to go into any detail at all on functionality. I'm just going to sort of blow through just pause just for a couple of seconds on each page, and we can discuss in more detail in the discussion session as things pop up about additional questions. I just want to show you sort of the range of what's available in BioPortal. And I'm actually not showing you everything that's in BioPortal. I sort of focus down on the things that might be the most interest or perhaps the most immediate interest for the OR community. So, of course, we have a tool, we have a page that allows you to browse our 300 ontologies and gives you some information about each one. That's this page, Ontology Browsing. Next slide, Peter. Take a given ontology, display it. You can see on the left here, we display the terms as a tree, and then a selected term will display a panel that shows everything that we know about that ontology. So all properties and code IDs and things like that. Also synonyms, information like that about individual terms. Next slide, please, nine. Also, there's a tool for visualizing ontology. Where you can follow an is a relationship. You can also follow the other relationships in the ontology. So what you see here is a small subset of what you can actually do. If you press the button up there on the top right, the full version, you can browse an ontology through the sort of graphical of boxes and lines representation, which in many situations is much more convenient than the tree view, which is on the left. Next slide, please, Ken. So here we have the capability for creating notes on particular terms in an ontology, and here has created a note where they're actually proposing a new term for the ontology. BioPortal itself is not an ontology editor. We will allow people to propose new terms for ontology authors. Those authors will get notified that someone is requesting a new term, and they can act on that information they choose. In addition, recently this notes capability has been tied in directly with Protégé, which is an ontology editor, so that when you're in Protégé, you can see the notes that people have created in BioPortal, and you can act on those notes as you choose as the ontology author. It's not just a simple note here, though. It's actually threaded discussion, so there are responses to this proposal and ultimate suggestions and things like that. Next slide, please, Peter. 11, I think. Yeah. So we also allow people to create reviews. At the bottom, someone's creating a review of SNOMED. SNOMED is a standard example in biomedicine, very, very large and heavily used ontology. Up on the top, on the right, there we see a bunch of metrics. So you see SNOMED actually has more than 300,000 classes. You can see some other metrics talk about what is in SNOMED as 42 properties, for example. And there are details of provenance information and contact details on the left there. Next slide, please, Peter, 12. So we allow you to create views on ontology. And the relationship between the view and the ontology is fairly flexible one. Typically, people will take a subset of the ontology and create a view out of it. To take a large ontology like SNOMED with 300,000 terms and produce something that's actually more useful in for a particular purpose. It can be very difficult dealing with these ontologies that have hundreds of thousands of terms in your application when really you may only need a couple hundred of them for a particular branch, and views allow you to do that. You can also extend the ontology using the view. You can do both. You can take a subset of ontology and then extend it. And you can see people have created a number of views of SNOMED for a variety of purposes. Next slide, please, Peter. So we also allow you to create mappings between terms in different ontologies. So we can create these mappings automatically by simply doing lexical comparison between term names or term name and a synonym. In addition, we can create a mapping manually that's more sophisticated than what we can do automatically and perhaps also much more reliable. But given the number of ontologies that we have, 300 and hundreds of thousands of terms, there's no way you're going to be able to map among all of those manually. So having auto even a somewhat lower correctness rate still useful functionality. Next slide, please, Peter, 14. In addition to this functionality inside of BioPortal, when you're running a BioPortal instance, as we do at Stanford, we provide widgets, which are simply little snippets of JavaScript code that you can embed in your web page, and it'll actually call out the BioPortal. So a typical thing what you want to do is to say search inside of an ontology or do autocomplete inside of an ontology. You can visualize piece of ontology. You can have a little widget that shows the tree view of the ontology, that sort of thing. So this is another way that people can use our BioPortal instance to create their own sort of custom application using these little widgets. And if you click below, you can click the little Get Code button there, and it will actually give you the JavaScript or the SNOMED ontology. So this the jump to box that you got would be a jump to for SNOMED itself and not for all of our ontologies. And likewise, not autocomplete. Autocomplete would autocomplete on SNOMED. So this is a very handy little thing, and it's very easy to for people to sort of extend or in some cases even replace our user interface for their own purposes. Next slide, please, Peter.
Okay. Our current architecture, we have BioPortal and we have a REST interface, and all BioPortal calls go to the REST interface. In addition, we support other applications calling into our REST interface, and the REST interface hides behind it the actual store of ontologies, which is kept in two systems, one of which is a Protégé server, and the other which is the LuxGrid system that was developed on Mail. And in addition, there are some their caching and the resource database that I had spoken about earlier. So this is currently how all things work. If you're building an application on top of BioPortal, it's nice to know that you have access to the same information that the BioPortal interface itself does, and you can make all of the calls because in our app, you could actually reproduce that in your other application. I'm going to skip a little bit here. Next slide, please, Peter. This is a little out of order, but I thought it would actually fit better here. So this is a planned architecture that we'll be moving to over the next year, in which case the REST layer remains, and everything works as in the previous slide. However, underneath, the ontology storage mechanism is going to be an RDF triple store, so we're going to replace the RDF server and the LuxGrid server with an RDF triple store, and we're going to allow, but not require, other applications in BioPortal to go directly to the triple store and bypass the REST layer. For many users, they're going to continue to use the REST layer because it's programmatic and it's sort of more what an application builder would expect. Nonetheless, we're going to provide access to the triple store. People will be able to write Oracle queries directly against the triple store and do whatever they'd like. Next slide, please, Peter. 17. So I mentioned that we provide this platform for building applications, and it's not only just available, we know about 35 applications that actually have been built on top of our infrastructure. And these span sort of a wide range of things, many of which are sort of fairly high visibility inside the biomedical community. I'm not going to go into any more detail, but the last one is a resource explorer created by a publishing company to explore their publications, or simply to use it as, in some sense, an advertisement, or get people more deeply involved with their publications. There are others here for the Gene Wiki for documenting all notable human genes, and data harmonization tools in the eMERGE network, which is a large biomedical project. Next slide, please, Peter. So this is 18, I think. In addition to the use of BioPortal that I've just been describing, we allow you to download a virtual machine and run it on your local site. And sometimes people do this because they have proprietary data in the health domain. That's often patient records, for example, which is not proprietary, but nonetheless is confidential and kept on it over the wire. You'll notice in the bottom in the middle there, we credit OOR. You guys also have one of our VM images, and moving forward, we think this is a reasonable way for OOR to interact with and make use of NCBO resources to sort of run your own installation. And you see there are other folks down there in other domains who have already set up resources. Earth Portal, there's a marine biology instance of BioPortal and like that as well. So next slide, please. This is just to show you that we're real, these are our traffic numbers over the last few years. See, our number of unique users is per quarter, so we're up to like 30,000 unique users per quarter, which is pretty substantial. It's not growing enormously, but it's still sort of trending upward. What's more interesting, perhaps, is the number of page views is rising at a much faster rate than the number of users is, indicating that people are making more use of the site as time goes by. As we get more content and we become more reliable, people are making more use of the of our resources. So these are very encouraging numbers on the UI side. So we have, and you can see there, we have more than 100,000 page views in the application per quarter at the moment. Next slide, please, Peter. So this is a plot of our back-end traffic. So a very small fraction of this is people coming to the UI, much larger fraction is people using applications or running scripts on the back end. And you'll notice that the trend here, note about this plot, is that it's logarithmic on the scale there. Until a couple of quarters ago, we had risen to like 10 million API calls per quarter. And just in the last quarter, we had sort of a spike in usage from one particularly dedicated user who ran our traffic up by a factor of 100 to close to a billion page views in that quarter. So I mean, this graph.
graph will go back down in the next quarter to some number between the 10 million page views and the 100 million page views. Nonetheless, it's a substantial amount of traffic that we're dealing with. And I'll have to admit, when we got this factor of 100 increase in our REST traffic without a lot of prior notice, it cost us a bit of to keep the system up and going, but we sort of got around that. And that was a challenge that we in the last quarter that in the end will benefit everyone. That we can actually handle the increased traffic. Next slide, please, Peter. So now that's all mostly old stuff that I've been talking about. Now we'll talk about what is new. In particular, what is new that is the most interest to the OR community. So we've just recently decided to adopt the two-clause BSD license, which was under the OR community. Previously, we three-clause version, and there wasn't any particular objection. So we did this to just make it easier for OR to software with fewer restrictions. We built an ontology recommender, which is built on top of the annotation service. And this is something that's very useful as you get a lot of ontologies, which eventually OR will have more than we have. And the idea is that if you have 1,000 or 10,000 ontologies, the first question people are going to ask is, which are the useful ones for me? Because you can't possibly like browse them all and look at them all. Even with 300, it's very difficult. So what the ontology recommender does is, essentially allows you to put in a paragraph or two of text that are maybe something from a paper or something that you just typed in. It sort of describes what it is that you're interested in. And then it analyzes the use of ontology terms relative to this text, and it sort of recommends the most closely matched ontology. So this is not something you can use blindly. It provides sort of a jumping off or starting point for you to start exploring the ontologies. It's much better than just sort of going through an alphabetical. Likewise, at a request of a number of users, we now support private ontologies. This is where a submitter will submit an ontology and doesn't and say it can't be browsed by everyone on the network. Only a few people can look at it. And typically, this is used in our environment when people are developing an ontology from scratch, and they want to be able to get feedback from a certain select group of users. But it's not really ready for prime time. They're not really ready for random questions and ideas. They want to explore it. Sort of targeted areas among a small community of users. And so we just supported this in the last month. Likewise, in the last couple of months, we've improved our support for OWL2. OWL2 ontologies we used to have to handle manually, that it's now sort of handled automatically. We don't have perfect OWL2 support. Our OWL2 support would be better. By the way, OWL is the standard web ontology language that is increasingly used for authoring ontologies. OWL2 is the latest version of it. We'll have much better OWL support whenever we shift over to the RDF triple store back in. But for the moment, it's certainly much better than it was previously. All of the OWL2 stuff was handled manually, and it'd be quite painful to get an OWL2 ontology into our portal previously. Next slide, please, Peter. This is the last one. What's coming? So along the lines of the private ontologies, we're going to have licensed ontologies, which the author of the ontologies by people to assert that they essentially licensed this ontology. Several commonly used biomedical ontologies. But you have triple support, supporting Sparkle queries I already talked about. MyBioPortal, this is a notion of limiting the number of ontologies that you have to look at. Once you've decided what the interesting ones are for you, you really don't want to see the other 1,000 ontologies all the time when you're moving at a BioPortal. This is a way to sort of hide them for you. Improved visualization. So I showed you the visualization. The team that did that is working on a much better system. We're going to remove all the flash technology inside of, which can be kind of a pain for us, and I understand it's been a pain for OR. And that's like very new as of last. It's not even on our website yet. On his blog, and we'll get it on our website soon. That will allow local installations to sort of add and remove tabs, and we actually have documentation that the developer wrote how you can add the tab portal and get it to show up in your local installation. We imagine this is a way in which OR will be able to extend our technology without having to fork. And so that's the end of my time, and it's also the end of my presentation. So Peter to move on.
Thank you, Ray. That is great. 22 slides in 20 minutes. Now the OR team needs to rush through the 23 slides in 20 minutes. I get to just start everyone off, but I just backtrack when OOR started towards the end of 2007. Three people brought something to the table. Leo Oberst brought his research from MITRE. Mike Dean brought the demo ontology library, which he was providing stewardship for DARPA after the demo program is sort of coming to an end. And then for me, I actually brought COTS, a project called Collaborative Ontology Development Services, to the table. And COTS actually was a joint project between Stanford and CIM3, and guess who was there in the beginning of COTS? Actually, we had Mark Musin, Ray Ferguson, Natasha Noy, and myself at that time. This was, I was checking my email, that was February of 2006. So we're going sort of almost full circles now, and everyone is moving forward with that notion. So if people bring up their slides, I'm going to slide number two now. I get to make a very exciting announcement. I guess those of you on the email list would already have seen this. As of 9 p.m. last night, we've got our OOR logo and the designs produced by Ali Hashemi became the final winner out of 24 designs that were submitted. So congratulations, Ali, and we all have a logo now. So I will turn this over to Leo and Ken and Todd to tell us about OOR. Leo.
Okay. Hello, folks. Thanks for joining us here. We should be on slide three now. The OOR charter. The basic charter is to promote the use and sharing of ontologies. So we really have a registry and a repository, and it's really a federated collaborative ontology repository. And we wanted to have this for ontologies and vocabularies in order to establish a place to go for them and also eventually to be able to map them, provide services. Next slide, slide four. We've been established as a community since January 2008, and probably most of the folks present were participants in the Ontology Summit that year, where we also emphasized open ontology repository. We're promoting global use and sharing of ontologies that is modular. Services and ontologies can be provided by people under a fairly open architecture and intellectual property paradigm. And we really want to emphasize the use of best practices for sharing and reusing ontologies. So the thing to remember in the OOR is that we're basically public, open. We provide a platform for value-added services and keep extending those services. And it's a global federation of projects, institutions, both commercial and non-profit. Next slide, five. Our goals are basically to have a well-maintained persistent store where users and developers can access the ontologies, find out relationships among the ontologies, register their own, and in a sense define policy and governance over those ontologies, and do so with provenance versioning, and act as a one-stop place to go, so that you can see the ontologies and actually perform services, queries, etc. on them. The services, of course, without a set of services, a repository is not so useful. So we want to provide extensible modular services, open services, so that if you want to provide something that you currently don't have, you can. This will facilitate cross-domain interoperability, mapping, inferencing, and visualization. And then, of course, registering semantic services at a certain point to support these peer OORs in the Federation. Next slide. A little graphic of how OOR instances could be federated across communities of interest, but also associated with these communities of interest could be private instances within a company's firewall. So you could have actually extensions using the open OOR federation, but maintain some notion of proprietary information behind your firewall. Next slide is 7. We have a great participation spectrum. We have a number of technology contributions from many institutions. So this is just a range of them. So we also know Stanford, NCBO, who are present on the call, but European universities and other companies and American universities are participants. Next slide is slide 8. Our mailing list currently has 130 subscribers. If you've participated in past OOR telecons and efforts, we've had substantial number of meetings and virtual events, panels discussing different applications, metadata for ontologies, architecture, services. So it's been fairly extensive in since January 2008, the amount of work and participation among our community. We also have a specialized IPR policy, which is the BSD 2 clause, simplified intellectual property policy, and we're glad to see that, in fact, BioPortal is adopting that too. We've made a number of workshops and conference presentations and participated in new ontology repository workshops, established some ourselves, and collaborated with many research groups across the world for the same effort, an open ontology repository. And, of course, we're maintaining that discourse, the range of communities and projects that are still participating are very extensive, and you'll see more detail in the later part of this briefing. Okay, thanks, folks. What we'd like to do now is invite Todd to begin to look at more detail in the goals and architecture of the OOR. Todd?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay, on to slide 9 then. So these are the goals, and they're more focused towards the architecture for the OOR. So we want to be able to provide a specification that's going to be sufficiently robust, that's going to support the infrastructure we're anticipating, as Leo mentioned and Peter mentioned earlier. So we're going to be able to create, share, search, and govern ontologies, and the governance issue is quite a challenge. We want to be able to enable and facilitate the open use of these repositories and be able to federate them. And we want to be able to have the architecture and the specification support multiple implementations. if you like. There's sort of a underlying theme here that we'd like to have OOR and BioPortal be the de facto standards for ontology repositories in the world. So some of the complementary goals we get from this is the fostering of collaboration among all ontology users, the identification and promotion of best practices for expressing and sharing interoperable ontologies, and the provision of services relevant for RDF, OWL, ontologies, and other representation languages. Now, that's one point that hasn't been mentioned yet, and one of the goals is, of OOR is to support multiple representation languages. On to slide 10, please. So, some of the assumptions we had going in, and I think they're still correct, is that we would like the OOR to support an evolutionary development path. We want to make sure that the functionality that the OOR provides and can support in the future is partitioned so that those functionalities are sufficiently independent. At this point, we aren't planning on storing instance data. However, we would hope the specification would support the ability of implementers to provide that capability if they so choose. Again, I said earlier that we want to support arbitrary representation languages, and we want the various pieces that that support those representation languages to be independent of the OOR functionality itself. So there's sort of core functionality, and then there's functionality and services that are language-dependent, and we want to try and ensure that those are sufficiently separate so that we do have this modular drop-in capability. And, of course, our initial support will be for OWL or OWL2. And as we have identified in previous discussions, and I'm sure Ray can attest to this, the metadata and provenance information is crucial for a well-functioning repository. And we are going to try and be standards-based to the extent possible, but as I mentioned earlier, perhaps BioPortal and OOR will become the de facto standards. On to slide 11, please. So, some of our principles, as I said, we want to support evolutionary development. We want the OOR to be distributed and scalable. Right, it's federatable, so it's federation, yes. We want our services that are language dependent to couple from the core function functionality. We want no hierarchical dependencies, and those can be snuck in various ways. We want to support the arbitrary ontology language representations. And the evolutionary development would be greatly aided if we were ontologically driven. So that's what we're aiming towards. And that's, of course, a reach or stretch goal, but it's nice to keep thinking about. And we want to be platform independent.
So with that, I want to turn this over to Ken Bukowski, and he can tell you with more specifics about the architecture and what we've done.
Okay, thanks, Todd. Moving on to slide 12, you can see that one of the first activities we performed was to take the requirements and convert them into use cases. And we now have a collection of use cases that is available at the link on that slide. The use cases were based on the original OOR requirements, on the standard ISO 11179, as well as looking at various ontology repositories, especially BioPortal. Going to slide 13, I don't have time to go through all of these use cases, but I give a rough outline there to indicate the variety of use cases that we identified. So, and you can see, of course, that federation is important, mapping, publicizing, querying, registering. And as I'm going to get to in a moment, there is an issue concerning how you administer these ontologies and their development. Going to slide 14, the current status of the architecture is that we did develop these requirements, collected together a number of candidate architectures, had a number of workshops, and they're continuing to be held. And we currently have a draft high-level software architecture, and that's based on these workshops and on the use cases that we developed. So there are a number of references on slide 14, a number of links, so you can take a look at what was developed there. And as I say, that's a continuing effort. Slide 15 shows the current architecture, at least at the highest level, showing the various components that we identified and the interaction, the use that the components make of each other. The federation aspect, of course, is important to ensure that different ontologies can interoperate properly. Moving on to slide 16, we do have a number of ongoing efforts that we are working on. In particular, we have three servers for developing developing new software, integrating into the system, and eventually positioning ourselves to have an actual production instance. At the moment, what we have that is easily available right now is the sandbox, and there's a link there on the slide 16 for that. We do have a code repository right now for current OOR code, and that's at SEMWeb Central. Moving on to slide 17, the development instances are a collaboration among a number of groups, the NCBO, of course, being the code base that's really essential and one of the motivations for this meeting to get closer integration between them and the work that we're doing. At Northeastern, we have been working on gatekeeping and policy development. And at Raytheon, Mike Dean and others listed on the slide there have been working on federation. And there's still others that are off doing their work, and our hope is that as time goes on, they will be integrated into their work can be integrated into the OOR. And as has been explained before by Todd, the intention is to have an architecture that would facilitate this kind of integration into all the different components of the system. Now, slide 18, I'd like to mention specifically an effort at the University of Toronto by Mike Grinninger and his colleague to support first-order logic. This is common logic support. And this is also concerned with issues such as modularization of ontologies. So that effort is called COLORE. On slide 19, there's the University of Bremen work by John Bateman and his colleagues on the heterogeneous tool set. I'd like to mention specifically that something that just happened, there's been an agreement to start a new standard called ISO NP17347 on ontology integration and interoperability. Clearly, efforts such as HETS is going to be important for this, and this slide shows some of the many languages that are now being supported by HETS. Slide 20, this is another effort in the ontolog community called the Sharing and Integrated Ontologies effort. John Sawa is one of the prime individuals, but there are many other individuals that have been involved in this effort. The idea is to try to have a formal structure for the interrelationships between ontologies at a logical level. On slide 21, I'd like to mention a number of our current priorities.
And we are trying to coordinate our efforts with the BioPortal team. We're attempting to get more policies and process into the OOR, and that's the effort that I've been working on. And we're also attempting through workshops and meetings to solicit content contribution and engage the various communities.
this is a continuing effort in outreach that we have been all that we've been engaging in. And in this talk, I haven't listed all of them. There's certainly many other communities that we've been involved in, such as geospatial. Going to slide 22, just a general slide asking any individuals at this meeting that have not yet joined our effort, we would ask you to consider joining our weekly conference call meetings and give us your input and your contributions. The slide 23, last slide, what I want to give you is brief status of the sandbox and the development work that we're doing. In particular, the relationship between BioPortal and the architecture that we identified is listed in the first bullet point. The GUI component and the BioPortal code corresponds to the presentation component in the OR architecture. The core component corresponds to the four components in the OR architecture listed there, and then there's an administration component. The components don't exactly correspond, but it's certainly a reasonably good correspondence there. One component that we have developed, the workflow component, has not yet been integrated with the other components, and that's a continuing effort now. Federation is another one that the efforts have been done on this and not yet developed as a component and integrated. And lastly, I'd like to mention that almost 2 years ago now, we actually had a meeting where we did a detailed comparison of the OOR and BioPortal, looking at the differences in their approach. I mean, as was mentioned earlier by Mark Musin, they have a grant, they have funding, but their funding is specific to their needs, and that's certainly very important. And so we did a comparison. When we did the comparative analysis, we looked at how, you know, what they're providing and how we could hope to map that to what the OOR would like to provide in their in the OOR instances, and hopefully this would now be a good point then to open up the meeting to further discussion by all the parties involved. Peter?
Thank you, Ken. And all the other presenters, this is definitely a good segue into the discussion segment. For those who are unfamiliar with the process, we now open the floor to discussion, and I guess architecture differences and gaps and how we mitigate those would probably be one of the key issues that folks from both BioPortal and OOR want to delve into. There are also pragmatic issues like how to get the BioPortal code installed and upgraded to provide continuity, how we could or how we should move towards a shared code repository to facilitate branching rather than the current situation whereby we have separate code repositories. And then there are various issues that the OR team members have brought up that as questions they might ask the BioPortal folks. So this would be a great opportunity. And so before we go into that, let me see if Ray has some idea on how he wants to proceed. Generally, maybe we could have people ask the questions and Ray could direct them to various folks within the BioPortal team, and I can direct the questions to the appropriate person on the OR team when the questions come up. Would that work, Ray?
Yeah, that would be fine. So if I feel like I can answer the question, I'll answer it. Otherwise, I'll direct it to someone else who's on the line who perhaps give a better response.
Fantastic. There are already some questions available, and for those who are already familiar, let's sort of queue up the people who want to make a comment or have questions or remarks to make. So on the chat board, there's a hand button. If you press the hand button, you go into a queue whereby you would be recognized by the moderator. And then again, remember to press star 3. Make sure you get heard before you start going into details. Also, we have 27 people on the call earlier, and there are only 18 in the chat room. So they're like 9 or 10 people who are not in the chat room yet. If you are not familiar with the process, go to the session page at the very top. There's a link that will take you into the chat room, especially if you have remarks to make. That's almost the only way people can see that you want the floor. Okay, let's start with Leo.
So this is, I guess, for Ray or Mark or the BioPortal folks, but I was intrigued by the comment about licensing ontologies in BioPortal for the future. And I'm just wondering what are your thoughts about that?
So I can tell you what the plan is. There are a couple of heavily used biomedical ontologies. SNOMED is the one that I use in all my examples that actually involve having a license. And it turns out that that many people do have a license for this, but we don't collect any information associated with the license. So technically, one might argue that we're actually in violation of the license by presenting it to everyone, whether or not you actually have a license to see SNOMED. These licenses are typically bought on a country-by-country basis, is my understanding. So people from most European countries, I think, already have a license, so that's not a problem. Our planned license mechanism is very much geared toward the particular restrictions of the biomedical ontologies that we're dealing with. And it turns out that in order to make these folks happy, it doesn't take very much to make them happy. And we're going to do the minimum that it takes to make them happy. One could imagine a much more sophisticated licensing scheme. But we don't have plans at the moment to implement it. So I'll tell you what we're all planning on doing. So when you submit an ontology and there's a license associated with it, that is that you don't want to show it to everyone unless they have the right license, we'll accept some text from you that says, please input this information, or you at least have to assert that you have the license in order to use this ontology. We allow people to ask for a license number or email address or username or something. So we allow people to ask for that information. And then on the other end, when people try to use the ontology, we'll block their use of the ontology until they provide that information. We don't actually have plans at the moment to verify that information. So, for example, if the ontology authors want a license number and a user types in a license number and presses the button that says, I assert that I have a license to view this ontology, it turns out that for many of our users, that's a sufficient level of authorization. So that's what ontology author to specify the text that's the information they want to collect. We're going to provide a text box to collect presumably that information, and we'll store that information. But we don't have plans at the moment to actually verify that information. If it turns out that there's a really heavily used ontology where we actually have to sort of API call, an application call, or something else, we could imagine doing a much more sophisticated scheme down the road. But we have very simple plans up front.
Okay, thank you.
Todd?
Hello. My question, I guess, is can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. My question is directed, I guess, towards Ray, or Ray, if anyone else you'd like to defer to. What are your plans, if any, for moving towards sort of a model-driven environment for your software development? And, of course, the reason for asking that is that would facilitate the creation of the specification that I referred to during the talk.
I can't say that we have any particular plans at the moment to move towards a model-driven software development process. We have very much an agile software development process at the moment. We do do monthly releases. We get what needs to be done, and we figure out what's the best thing that we can get into our hands of our users as quickly as possible, and that's what we focus on. So I can't tell you at the moment that we have any particular plans to move it toward a more model driven approach. It may be that there's something that we can do that would facilitate that approach from your side, but we don't have any immediate plans to move in that direction on our side.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Peter, I think you're next in the queue.
Yeah, okay. They're just for Leo and Todd and anybody else, after you make your remarks, or you could press the hand button again, and that lowers your hand. So I actually have a couple of questions, possibly for Ray or Trish. One is in regard to installations and upgrades. Ray and I have had several exchanges lately as we changed course and decided that we will, at least for the time being, run the OR sandbox with a almost straight file portal code and keep that updated, and then as giving us a little bit more time and leeway to play around with things in the development box. So we're in the process of installing the sandbox now, which thanks to your arrangement, you will be providing a VM image, which is fine. The next question actually is continuity. One, when upgrade comes along, because the first time, of course, one can install the appliance, but when it comes to upgrade, let's say 3 months or 4 months later, we will have huge customizations, we will have content, and so on, that would most probably defy the use of a second installation of an appliance. How could we sort of shape the upgrade arrangement to facilitate that?
Okay, I can start to address this question, and maybe I'll answer the parts that I can now, and maybe you can ask me specific questions when I'm done. So just within the last couple of weeks, we've decided that the VM we're going to put out new versions of the VM roughly three times a year, so space that at 4 month intervals. And we do releases of BioPortal monthly, but we think that a monthly update of the VM is it's on the one hand more work than we want to do, and I think it's also on the other hand it's more work than any of our users would actually want to do as well. So we think that roughly the right trade-off between getting reasonable functionality, not having to be in the constant mode of upgrading the VM, that sweet spot is roughly about every 4 months. So our plan. So we're going to do, I think it's October and February and June or July, however it works out, for every 4 months. And so currently, and we recommend that anyone who's going to run BioPortal, at a minimum, that they start off using the VM, and then they can migrate away from it over time if they feel like they need to. But there's a lot of sort of database setup and other configuration information that's done for you with the VM. And many people will not need to change, they'll change some aspects of the system, but not other aspects of the system. So it's much better to work from a work and extend it than it is to sort of start from scratch from the source code, for example, and install it. So we're actively discouraging people from downloading our source code and going from there. When you download VM, you get the source code for that VM. As far as working with changes to the source code, this is always a problem. But I think in discussions with Peter, we arrived at solutions that we thought would actually make things go at least as smoothly as they can. Currently, and this was alluded to, I think, in my last slide, on the equation always, there's the user interface side and there's the back end side. If people want to make changes on the user interface slide, on the side, there are a range of things you might want to do. First, we provide a number of tabs, and we can see that for some installations in BioPortal, not all of those tabs are useful, and people might want to hide them. And so we actually provide the ability now to hide a couple of the tabs, and we will expand that over the next month. So essentially, any of the BioPortal tabs can be configured to be turned off. In addition, people may want to provide their own tab, let's say for the moment, sort of completely written from scratch to act some other aspect of the system. A particular candidate, just from listening to the folks talk this morning, would be some tab that allows you to configure a workflow, for example. I mean, that we have in BioPortal at the moment, imagine a tab that allows you to define a workflow that people could use in various situations. So that's something that's sort of completely outside the current scope of BioPortal. You could add a tab. We provided with Paul's documentation that really just generated last night. There's an example of essentially how to write roughly a Hello World tab in BioPortal and sort of add your UI in. So those are the easy things that one can do in the UI that will allow it to be extensible. With essentially no code changes, no complications down the road for BioPortal changes that will cause changes in your UI that you'll have to adapt. But somewhat more complicated, but we hope not disastrously so, is if you want to take some existing piece of our UI and add it or modify it, and sort of run with that sort of modified UI. And then, of course, when there are new BioPortal releases, you'll need to merge your changes in. We're actually in the process now of going through and simplifying all of our existing UI and modularizing it to some extent. So in the future, this will be easier than and we're doing that for sort of independent of this OOR collaboration. But the side effect of that is that in the future, it will be easier to modify and extend our UI and have things work consistently across the application because it will be built in terms of sort of a common set of components underneath. So that's sort of the story on the UI side. You can remove stuff, you'll be able to add entirely stuff, and you can change our existing stuff. And to the extent that changes are independent of whatever we do, which is not a totally unrealistic assumption, a simple merge source code control system should be able to allow a UI updated from one version of the VM to the other, hopefully without people will still have to look at it. It may not be a completely automated process, but it doesn't seem like this is going to be a huge blocker. On the back end, there's also a good story. We move away from the Protégé back end and the Lexis back end. This will help you So we currently deal with a number of different ontology formats. We deal with L1 and L2. We deal with the older system. There's a some commonly used in biomedical ontologies used elsewhere called OBO. There's a format for ontologies that we get from NIH that's called the top format is called RF. So we deal with all these formats. We're going to stick them all into the same triple store. As you have additional ontologies that you want to deal with that we don't deal with for whatever reason, those can also go into the triple store. And triple store provides sort of a uniform interface to these things. So that provides sort of a generic place to put stuff independent of the capabilities of Protégé and LexGrid. So that will actually help out the OR process quite a bit, I think. And also the good news is that we don't actually have to when you modify the back end, you could add additional REST capabilities if you chose to do so. You also might write Sparkle directly against our back end, that is against our storage system, and to provide whatever capabilities that you need. So the fact that you can get directly into the guts, the underlying storage system with Sparkle, and do very low level and also very sophisticated queries should allow it to create on the back end whatever capabilities you need that the system doesn't currently have. So I'm sorry, that was a very long answer, Peter.
But it's great. Let me interject and ask one question. Frank Oaken has been trying to get across on the chat board is what and another person too. What triple store are you using or are you planning to use? Have you decided yet?
I don't know if there's an official stamp on this decision yet. In fact, there is not an official stamp on this decision, but we're definitely looking at four store as a triple store. We've hired a sort of a triple store expert, and sort of by accident, he's actually done contributions to the four store triple store. And not only does he know it very well, but also it seems to be at least competitive with the other triple stores that are out there in terms of scalability and reliability. And people seem to be, I'm not sure if gravitating in that direction is the right term, but nonetheless, it seems a plausible choice. And although we haven't made an official announcement that this is what we've chosen, it's likely that will be the final choice.
Okay, great. Maybe one last question about support. Since we are running a sandbox with almost straight BioPortal code, you guys, at least before we build out a community capability to support it, you guys would be the best people we could turn to. Would you want us to subscribe to the BioPortal support list, or should we collect them on our user list and then have someone reflect those to you guys? Or one of you could even answer, be subscribed to the OR user list and then help guide us.
Certainly we want to funnel all requests for support through the support at bioncology.org mailing list, which will become subscription-only list in the next, it's not at the moment, but it will become so in the next month or two. So that list ensures that we track everything that comes in. We certainly track everything that's in that list and make sure that things don't get dropped. So somehow we want stuff to show up on that list, and we can discuss what's the best mechanism for making sure that things do so. For sort of questions about the REST API or the VM or upgrades or anything like that, all of those sorts of questions should go to the list. Perhaps we can talk later about what the best mechanism is for getting things on the list. Should there be someone whose responsibility is to take questions posted to OR and post them to the list, or do you want to just direct people directly to the bioontology support mailing list? That list doesn't get a huge amount of traffic, so subscribing to it on your team shouldn't be enormous. I think what I heard the other day was like 100 messages a month, so like 3 a day roughly. That's my answer to that.
Okay. When you say subscription only, do you mean sort of subscribe only by authorized membership within your community, or are you meaning something else?
No. It's going to be an open list. Anyone can subscribe. At the moment, you don't have to subscribe to send a message to the list.
Oh, really?
It's just a mailing list. It's just an email address. But the problem that we ran into is that the messages sent to the list are archived on the web,
mm-hmm.
and we want to make it perfectly so anyone can browse them and make use of those questions and answers later. We want to make it very clear that that's happening, and we didn't feel like that was clear with an email address that you just subscribed to. That you just sent to. So anyone will be able to subscribe to the list or unsubscribe from the list. It's not closed in any sense of fashion. It's just that we want you to subscribe to a list, so that it's apparent to you when you send a message to the list that this will be archived and lots of other people will see it. You can't send a private message to us through the list.
Yeah,
we want to make that very clear to our users.
Thank you, and that's very clear. We almost take those things for granted. But thank you very much, Ray. So I better let Yufim Zook ask his question. Jeff, go ahead.
This is Yufim. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Two quick questions. One is about our software. So you mentioned that you talked about licensing on ontologies. What about software, local installation of open ontology repository software?
Local installations.
I'm sorry, is that a question for me or for Peter?
It's probably for us, right?
For you guys who do open repository.
All right. Let's look at sort of near term and long term. Long term, OOR being a open source software project, there will be a set of code from OOR which allows people to install locally. And if you looked at, you remember Leo's slide, which indicated that
is it available or it is some long-term future?
It's longer term. The immediate term is even the OR team is using this almost the straight BioPortal code to run the sandbox while they are sort of develop code in the development box to bring up to fulfill the requirements and the architecture and the APIs that is being defined as we meet on a weekly basis. So in the near term, we're talking about the BioPortal code. I mean, BioPortal provides a set of VM images that people could install. So if you wanted to run locally, I mean, there's an appliance that you can install in minutes, they claim.
Okay, so basically using BioPortal to provide the features that you describe. But in the future, you plan to expand?
They expand on those features. For example, BioPortal now only supports R and RDF and OBO. Maybe eventually OR might support Common Logic in other languages. Then by that time, those codes will be available because it's an open source project. But for now, one can install the BioPortal codes. And if I have the slides on the screen as well, you would have noticed, given the IPR policy, which is a gift license, people could actually install and run and do whatever they do want to do with the code, which
right.
I think is very unencumbered. So you could actually go proprietary with these open source code. I mean, given that you sort of meet the requirements of the license.
Yeah, I certainly believe that local installations will actually facilitate growing knowledge. And second question is about, let's say, we locally installed BioPortal. In BioPortal architecture, I think this is question to BioPortal, do you have something like parent-child relationships, something like this is global installation, this is local installations, and there is some special relationships?
So the answer to that question is no. We have thought about how something like this. We don't have any plans. I can tell you that many of our users take our software and install it inside their firewalls, and not only could we not get in, but they actually couldn't even get out. So those instances are sort of completely detached. And there's no way, even in the future, that they would ever be sort of federated into a larger system. What we do have, it's not the parent-child system that you just talked about, but nonetheless, if you didn't know how it was implemented, you might actually think that that's how it worked, is that we provide a mechanism. So right now, people have input 300, roughly 300 ontologies into BioPortal, and many of those have a URL, and we go and check every night and download and if the ontology has been changed, we download the latest version of the ontology. And so every morning we have roughly the latest version of the ontology in BioPortal. We provide that same functionality to our users. Many of them who install an installation don't want all 300 of ontologies. They want a subset. And so they can get started by querying BioPortal. They can get started and pull in, let's say they're interested in 5 ontologies. They can specify which ones they want. They can collect all the metadata from BioPortal automatically, and they can set up their system to be preloaded with those 5 ontologies. And afterwards, their VM runs the same logic that we do. Their VM can go out and check those 5 ontologies nightly and download the latest version and publish it. So every morning they come in and they have the latest version of the ontology. If you didn't know how this worked on the back end, you might assume, for example, that BioPortal was a master and these guys were sort of slaves and they updated directly from BioPortal. That's not the way the implementation works, but from the user standpoint, that might be what you think might happen. The BioPortal was the master and these guys were downloading from BioPortal. In fact, they're downloading in the same way that BioPortal does. They're redoing all of the logic. That's sort of an internal processing matter. From the outside world, these guys might be seen as sort of children of the main BioPortal instance. You can also, of course, add in ontologies that are not in BioPortal and extend it in various ways. So we have thought about trying to do federation as well. We don't have any immediate plans at the moment to do something like that. At the moment, we're the repository for biomedical ontologies. There are roughly 300 of them. That's not such a huge number that we need a lot of instances around. It might be nice to have more than one and have queries go across them. We haven't thought in detail about how to actually do this or even a commitment that we're going to do it.
Thank you. I think it will be pretty soon that it will be necessity for you with the growing knowledge and with the growing number of ontologies, you will need to have kind of distributed masters that would be submasters or federated masters. Thank you.
Yeah, actually, Jeff, I mean, that federation is high up on the OOR to-do list, and the team from BBN, Mike Dean and his colleagues, have actually produced code to do federation and had run one demo, although not incorporated into the OOR code repository quite yet, but they've had local installation, local instance of the BioPortal code and had produced federation codes with it. So once we start gathering the contributions, code contributions, you would be able to see that into the OR dev box maybe in the not too distant future.
Thanks.
Okay, I guess we are about 4 minutes to the hard stop at 10 a.m. Pacific time. So, Yuri, you are the last person with your hands up, which is perfect. If you keep your question and answer to within 2 minutes, that would give maybe another 2 minutes for Ray and or myself to wrap up. Yuri?
Thanks. Yeah, I just probably have quick question, yes or no. Do you plan or do you have some more advanced feature of Protégé in the web portal, like to use reasoners online?
So the question is, do we use reasoners inside of a BioPortal? Yeah, so the answer is no, we don't. This issue has come up before, and there are different reasoners, and different reasoners work differently with different ontologies and are more appropriate for different ontologies. So our feeling and our current storyline is that it's the authors of the ontologies who should be picking the reasoner that gets used. We do recommend that people upload most people who are using an ontology want to work on the reasoned version of the ontology and not sort of the raw code. So we recommend people actually upload the reasoned version of the ontology rather than the raw version. The other version can be uploaded as a view, for example, if you actually want to use it. But from the standpoint of users, most users don't want the raw stuff there. Like the reasoned version, and we think it's the ontology authors who are the best place to choose a reasoner to use and actually run it and verify that everything is correct. But we haven't signed up to actually do a reasoning on ontologies. It's not something that has been talked about. We decided for the moment that we're not going to do it. It's possible down the road the position will change. I wouldn't bet on it, but it's at least possible. But that's our story at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Peter. We probably could provide such opportunity for our users or if they want to find some reasoner to use with ontology, if they could use the ontology repository, for example. It's just the idea.
Yes. Yeah. Let's discuss it in the architecture and API sessions and see what the community needs.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ray, you want to wrap up?
I'll hand it off back to you, Peter. We're very excited about the possibility that you guys can build on and extend our code. If you do things that are completely generic, which sounds like we'll be doing, we may be able to fold them back in also into the standard BioPortal release. So it's possible for this collaboration to sort of work both ways and benefit us both, and we're excited about the possibility. So I'll hand back to Pete's closing remarks.
Absolutely. We definitely look forward to that, and I think this is a very exciting time, and we're renewing the collaboration between the BioPortal team and the OOR team, and we shall look forward to good things to come out of this joint team. And thank you, everyone, for the participation. Bye-bye. That's the end. Right on time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.